The planning saga, the 20-year, two-decades-long planning saga in County Meath, the house demolition completed, video of it online, lots of people suggesting other things can be done, lots of you suggesting that, sorry, planning is planning and all of that. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk as well about social housing construction figures for the country and for the county. With me on the line is Dr. Lorcan Sir, who's a senior lecturer in housing at Technological University in Dublin. He's been writing about this in the Irish Times. And Lorcan, if we could start with the social housing figures, and look, the tail of the tape is that for a number of years now, the government hasn't met its social housing delivery targets. This is where you focus on what's being built, where it's being built, which local authority is delivering, and then which local authority is actually building. The overall figures seem okay. Government made 91% of its own target of 10,000 new social houses last year, but they're not building them all, are they?
Morning, Kerry. No, they're not. And it's really important that when you hear, for example, you'll hear government politicians say that, you know, we're building the most social housing since the 1970s, you know, when we really did it. What they miss out is that actually this time around, even though we built 9,088 new social houses last year, councils, like local authorities, only built about 16% of them. Back in the 70s, that would be 100%. So the question then is, how are they getting the other 90-odd percent? And it's quite important, because the way we get our social housing, you know, the way we do it means that the state either owns it or it doesn't. So last year, the councils, local authorities, only built about 1,600 houses themselves. So the rest was provided in two different ways. One, councils went out, they built their houses, but they also went out and they bought another 1,200 or 1,300 new houses, mostly apartments. So that's, they do a kind of a deal in a couple of ways, Gerry. So they'll find a landowner who has planning permission for houses or apartments, and they'll say, look, we'll fund that, and at the end of it, when you build them, you take a bit of profit and we'll get the houses. Or they'll go out and they'll buy brand new apartments or houses from under the nose of the first-time buyers quite often. And to do it. So that's one way to do it. And the other way then is all the approved housing bodies. So people will be familiar with the likes of Clwyd and Respond and Tua and Fold and all those people. And they do great work. And they provide, you know, nearly half of all social housing. And they build very little, though, and they go out and they buy from the market, you know, thousands of new, mostly apartments. Problem there is that, you know, those approved housing bodies are great, and they house a lot of people, 50 or 60 odd thousand apartments and houses they have at the moment. But the state doesn't own them. And the problem then is the state has funded them. The state has given loans to the approved housing bodies to build these, which is great. When the loans are up, the approved housing bodies can then do what they want with the property. So they can sell them, for example, to fund the construction or the maintenance of other ones. So you might see, like we did in London in particular, you see lots of council flats and houses, because they're usually in quite, you know, city centre areas and quite valuable areas now. They sell them off and they take the money, and in theory they're supposed to build more social housing, but they don't, and the money disappears.
And
so
it depletes,
how we deliver them is very important.
It depletes the housing stock, which is part of the reason why we are where we are. What's the story in Kerry, Lorcan? Just, you know, 1,600 houses built directly by local authorities. A lot of them, you know, achieved less than 10% of their annual direct build target. Kerry was at the higher end at 8.7%, 25 houses built by Kerry County Council last year.
Yeah, let's start with the good news. So Kerry had a target last year of 287 new social houses, and they delivered 289, right? So they achieved their target overall. The issue is that they were also given a target, you know, of that, only 25 new houses. So of the 289 that were delivered in Kerry, the council only built 25 of them. They went out and they bought a turnkey at another 25. So out of the 289, Kerry County Council themselves only delivered 50. The approved housing bodies in Kerry delivered another 169, and then they got 70 through what we call Part 5. You know, when a developer builds a new housing estate or apartment,
he has to put a certain amount aside.
So out of the 289, Kerry County Council only delivered themselves directly 25. And that's an issue. Now, over the years, Kerry County Council, like, in fairness to them, back in 2016, they delivered 5. And then they peaked in about 2022 when they themselves delivered 133. And then last year, including, you know, go out and buy, they delivered 50, 25, built in 25. So they're kind of on a, I don't know what kind of trajectory they're on. But what you see it, it's not just in Kerry. You see it across the country that increasingly councils are relying on approved housing bodies to do what councils traditionally would have done themselves.
Does that suggest it's a systemic problem, though? Not a problem, but it's the system. I mean, councils, they're not equipped, or are they equipped, to have their own construction wing, shall we call it that, to deliver and scale up and build 289 houses a year themselves.
Yeah, and it's not always fair to beat the councils over the head with a stick because they face their own issues. And one of the issues is that the more they rely on approved housing bodies, the less institutional capacity they have themselves. So if an architect retires or a quantity surveyor retires in the council, well, will we bother replacing them? Because sure, the AHBs are doing all the work for us. So there's the issue there, but also there's the issue over the years. Now, remember, the houses that were delivered in 2025 would have been started in 2022, 2023, for example.
Yeah.
But the funding application process could have started in 21, 22, you know, a long time ago, when the funding issues that councils had in dealing, they have to deal directly with the Department of Housing and back and forth with ideas and capital plans and business cases and all that kind of nonsense that went on for years. So the houses that appeared in Kerry in 2025 could have been started 4 or 5 years ago. So we have to be careful. Now, the system has been changed by James Brown in the last year so that councils no longer have to interact multiple times with the Department of Housing. They can do it if there's a threshold, it could be 7 million or whatever. Any project under that, they only have to deal with them once. And that should improve things, not just in Kerry, but across the country. But prior to that, you know, councils had to go back and forth to the council, to the Department of Housing. And of course, the Department of Housing would take their sweet time of getting back to the council, who then had to go back to the Department of Housing, who took their sweet time to go back to the council. So things took a lot longer than they needed to.
Okay, so is that, are you suggesting that it would be a better idea going forward, and it would have to start now, and notwithstanding what you said about James Bond making changes to make things more efficient, that councils should be scaling up their capacity, that the government should be directly building more through local authorities than relying on approved housing bodies or buying turnkey even?
Yeah, I think so. The issue with, and I think in fairness to the government, and I don't say that very often, Gerry, in fairness to the government, I think that's their plan. Like, the thing about acquiring them from the market, right, and the reason there's so many houses, and particularly apartments, mostly apartments, available for sale to the SAIS, to the local authorities and approved housing bodies, is because all the institutional investors who would have bought them have disappeared. But if they come back into the country, the developers are going to sell all their apartments to the institutional investors who would pay more. So where are the councils and AHBs going to get all these turnkeys? So that's an issue. And of course, if councils build themselves, at least we own them as a state. We own the stock. You know, we sold off 2/3 of our housing stock in the last 100 years anyway.
Yeah.
And we need to build that up as the population grows and increasingly people are, you know,
Is this an ideological argument, though? And it's going to be played out in the politics of whoever is in the next government and all of that. The question of where does the private market come into it? You've got the institutional investors you're talking about as well who are now gone. They may well come back if conditions change. But then you have, let's say, if we have 2010, God forbid we do, but if that happens again and construction goes into a freeze, who are the ones that are going to build? It's going to be the local authorities if they have the capacity built up. Is that the idea?
No, you're right. And back in 20, I think it was 14, like all the local authorities across the country built a total of 74 houses. That was it, right? So what you need to do really, and I see this, so I'm talking to you from Bolton Street, where we train plasterers, bricklayers, blocklayers, architects, quantity surveyors, all that kind of stuff, right? And I see it here as construction declines, we close courses and then we struggle to open them up again, particularly things like plastering, like really good skills, you know?
Yeah.
And I think what needs to happen across local authorities is they need to have a consistent output. I'll say, I'm just going to throw a figure out there, like 10,000 new houses every year, right? Not 1,600 like they did last year, but 10,000 new council houses every year. Every year, right? Good times and bad. And that allows us to keep apprenticeships going. It allows us to keep churning out quantity surveyors, architects and planners. It allows social housing to be delivered consistently every year as the population increases. And we have that in good times and bad. So relying on the market means you're kind of going with the ebb and flow of what's happening in the market. If nothing is built, well, then there's nothing for councils to buy. And that's an unsustainable way to do
your... And it takes a long time to train up plasterers and bricklayers and get them through a college course for when you need them. So a constant flow would be a better idea. Would you have efficiency worries? Someone saying, look, the private sector does it quicker and more efficiently than a big public sector?
Never been proven, to be really honest with you. That's a classic one that comes from the private sector to say, like, you know, use us. It's never really been proven. And it doesn't really work. It definitely doesn't work out any cheaper to do it. The issue with the councils doing it is that you can maintain control over it. That's really it. Like, you're
that's
not
the control. And the ownership is what you're saying as well. Okay, Lorcan, yeah. I wanted to get your view. Look, and a lot of people getting in touch on this. Ever since it happened, I'm sure it's been a story in Meath for a long time, but particularly that imagery of the fine houses, I call it myself, as they'd call it here in rural Ireland, being knocked by the JCBs in County Meath. A long and winding saga, but a lot of people getting in touch feeling that maybe something else should have been done here. But some, and a number, saying, look, this was dead right. You either have planning laws or you don't.
And what you want to, do you want to know what
What's
I think?
What's your view?
Yeah. Oh, it should have been knocked. Without a doubt, it should have been knocked 20 years ago. It should never have happened in the first place. If we don't have, like, where does it end? It's not just the question of the house. It's the question of the precedent that sets that you can build what you want and then go cap in hand seeking forgiveness later on. In the last 2 years, 11,000 applications for retention planning permission were made, say, for 24 and 25. And, you know, an awful lot of those were, so a lot of them are for technical changes, you know, for, yeah. I want to put in a new doorway and whatever. And that's all fine. That's what it was designed for, retention planning permission, for minor alterations to your planning application. It was not designed for people to build a house and then go back and seek planning permission, right? And if you set that kind of precedent by allowing people to do that, God only knows what could happen. So in the last 2 years, there's been loads of applications for massive extensions. We saw the man in Sutton and County Dublin building 120 something square metre extension without planning permission on the back of his garden. He's been told to take that down as well. And then the Murrays in Meath have been told to take that down. You can't have people doing what they want willy-nilly. There's all sorts of implications for infrastructure, for proper planning and development, for communities and schools, and all sorts of stuff. So I think, if, you know, in England, I'll tell you what, in England, I lived for many years in England, right? And if you built a house and the planner told you to put yellow tiles on the front of the house and green tiles on the back, that's what you would do. Otherwise, the house would be taken down, right? And yeah. We have a very flahoolic attitude to rules and regulations in Ireland. We're quite Mayfane-y, if I may say so, Jerry. Here, it's my land, my house, and I'll do what I want with it. And That's not really the way it works.
Private property rights, and I won't have anyone telling me what I do with my property.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, then we look over at the countries in Europe where things kind of work a lot better in housing. And one of the reasons is because I don't like to use the word compliant, but they have much more respect for the planning system. Now, the reason we don't have respect for planning, and one of the reasons is politicians never had it themselves. Eamon de Valera called it a very, what did he call it? I can't remember. I think it's something like a suspicious profession, you know. And we've had all sorts of politicians over the years undermining the very concept. Even I don't know if you remember Charlie McCreevy's plan for decentralisation back in 2002, where he just decided to kind of put government departments everywhere, including in Knock Airport, you know, with no concept of the implications for families or communities or schools or planning or trains or anything like that, you know. So politicians themselves have done their best to undermine the whole, you know, theory and practice of planning over the years. And that doesn't happen much in other countries, but here we have a very fluidic approach to it, you know. So I was delighted to see it taken down. It's a pity it took 20 years. I mean, there's lots of other instances around the place of that happening. So I think it sends a signal out to people now, you know, that you're not going to get away with it as easily as you thought you would.
Okay, a final brief word, Lorcan. Look, this one's stealing all the headlines at the moment. I'm not sure it's going to solve the housing crisis or maybe make it worse, depending on what side it is. It's a hot topic at the moment. But the beds and the sheds, the modular homes at the end of the gardens, there's a lot of time and energy being talked about them at the moment. Look, will they provide any solution, or is it just a small part of what needs to be done anyway?
It's absolute nonsense, so to be honest, which is a sign of desperation that you think that you'd house people in people's back gardens. But there's all sorts of issues around things like building standards, fire safety, particularly in back gardens of terraced houses, the impact on sewage and water. Wait till you see, now it probably won't happen as much in Kerry, but I can see in large towns and cities around Ireland, more people moving into sheds and back gardens. You can imagine the parking situation in already tight urban areas. I could see rows over that.
Let me ask you, just on all those things, let me ask you this question. Would that now be factored in by the person making the decision and the person deciding to build? That they'll say, look, it won't work for those reasons, so it won't happen. So there'll be only a certain amount of these built. It'll be a small element of what might happen anyway. It's an option for people if it works. If it's safe, if there's parking, if there's an agreement.
Yeah. Yeah, the person making the application will have no clue about the sewage or water capacity, for a start.
But they should, shouldn't they? That's the thing. If you're building something, you need to factor all that in, don't you?
I would know about it because this is part of my job, right? So I know that we're already at 99% capacity in sewage in Dublin already, right? We can't take much more. So and also the same with water. So like all our plans for new housing are really interesting because like there's no water there for them, right? So that's a big issue.
Sure. Look, we're sending it up from the Shannon, Lorcan. We'll be grand. We'll send it over from the West Coast.
I'm going to leave my cap on specially and think of you as I wait for the water. No, it's we have we do have huge issues with this. You know, I'd love to hear hear what Ish Gairn have to say about this, because they're the ones who have to manage the sewage and the fresh water, you know. And then there's also the idea, I think it'll create, to be honest with you, I think it will create a huge black market economy in people renting for cash, to be honest with you. And everybody who's designed
that'd
to
be
go
your
into
fear.
Them,
yeah.
I know,
yeah.
I guarantee it'll happen, without a doubt, because there's no requirement to register with the Residential Tenancies Board. There's no, you don't get a tenancy agreement. You're there, you have the
it's
same
a licensing
right.
agreement instead.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's like going to a B&B or a hotel. That's what you have when you enter a B&B, is a license agreement, which means, really interesting, right? It means the landlord or the hotel owner or the B&B owner can walk into your accommodation anytime they want. And you can't do that if you're a tenant. So can you imagine, I'd hate to think of all the weirdos who are going to turn into landlords and have, you know, Brazilian girls in the backyard or whatever, and then, you know, do all sorts of nefarious things. This is ripe for abuse, this whole kind of proposal, I think.
Okay, all right, Lorcan, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for giving us your review on it. That's Dr. Lorcan Sir there, who is a lecturer in TUD, a senior lecturer in housing in TUD on those housing issues. If you have a view, get in touch with us on the programme.